You're listening to Civic Media. You can tune into any of our live shows on any radio station across the state with the Civic Media app. Find us in your phone's app store and listen anytime, anywhere.
Welcome, everybody, and happy Tuesday afternoon. The flooding just does not subside across southeastern Wisconsin. We were hit yet again by a goodly amount of rain, exacerbating an already terrible situation for many across southeastern Wisconsin, especially here in the Milwaukeeland area. And in response to that, some breaking news just this afternoon. Republican U.S. Congressman Scott Fitzgerald has asked the Trump administration to make an emergency declaration as to southeast Wisconsin as we continue to recover and rebuild from the flash flooding and storms over the weekend and continuing yesterday. In a letter to the U.S. Federal Emergency Management Agency on August 11th, Fitzgerald asked for an emergency declaration to be made to ensure that all Wisconsin communities affected have access to the recovery resources that we need while the damage assessment is proceeding. We discussed that yesterday with Milwaukee Fire Chief Aaron Lipsky, as well as the director of Milwaukee County's Emergency Management Department. That assessment will take likely more than a month to conclude. If you have information about damages to your home or business, you have downed trees, power lines, etc., you can dial 211 to report that. There is a plethora, a large swath of information available on both Milwaukee County, Waukesha, and Ozaukee County's websites. But again, 211, mainly Waukesha, Ozaukee, Milwaukee counties, bits of Washington County as well. Jim, just wanted to share that breaking news with you and with everybody. Welcome again. Some breaking news this afternoon. I'm Maggie Dawn, and we've got with me for this first half hour my special guest, Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney. We're going to be talking about some of the legal wrangling going on with the Trump administration, as well as some incredible language coming from a U.S. District Court judge in the Southern District of New York late yesterday, rejecting the Trump administration's request to release the grand jury transcripts from Ghislaine Maxwell's criminal indictment. This is the second court to do so. This judge going a bit further in the condemnation of what the court basically says is the smoke and mirrors, the manipulation of public perception that is happening here. We'll get to some of that exact language in just a moment. We also have breaking news this afternoon. There's a new additional Democratic candidate that has thrown his hat into the first congressional district race. He will also be running against Brian Steil. We're going to have political editor Dan Schaefer join us at 5:30 to discuss. You're not going to want to go anywhere today, because at 5 p.m. I have got U.S. Congresswoman extraordinaire Gwen Moore joining me. We're going to be talking about the cheater pumpkin eaters who just want to cheat more and more and more. We're talking about the Texas gerrymandering scandal, the race to the bottom. We'll discuss all that as well as the floods with Representative Moore this afternoon. So please, stick with us. Other breaking news today. If you missed it, I've got you covered. Not to worry. The Supreme Court of the United States will have the opportunity to declare gay marriage illegal. We all knew it was coming, but did you know who would be the one to bring that case? I know, and Jim knows. We'll get to all of that today and more. You won't be one bit surprised who it is that is bringing gay marriage back to the Supreme Court. And again, a very different Supreme Court this time around than the court that decided all people are indeed created equal and love is equal in the landmark Obergefell decision of many, many years ago now. Welcome back to the show, Jim, and welcome to each and every one of you. Good to see you, friend.
Maggie, always good to be with you. With respect to the flooding, again, we focus upon, obviously, all of our community members, our neighbors, our friends, our family who are suffering in the catastrophic events that have happened just recently. The secondary issue is implicit in what you just said as well. we have these attacks on government, right? And these attempts across the board to blow it up. Here is an example of what government should be doing. And yes, we can applaud my congressman, he's mine, Fitzgerald, for asking for this certification that presumably will be in advance of some monies coming in. Government is there to serve us and to address what we need in times of crisis. And yes, also in times of not crisis. This is precisely the reason why government is important and needs to be, again, the focus of the supervisors, the people who are in charge. They're the ones who need to ensure that these mechanisms are there. Attacks on FEMA, reductions of it, other things like this, limit the capacity of government to serve us in these times of crisis.
As a political matter, I'm going to give Scott Fitzgerald and others who no doubt were in communication with him, including, I'm certain, Representative Gwen Moore, as well as the governor, as well. This was the smart political way to ask for this declaration. Had it come from the governor, from the county executive, the mayor, or Congresswoman Moore, those would be Democrats asking for that declaration, which invariably would be met with a no. I think, again, kudos to Republican Representative Congressman Fitzgerald for understanding that his constituents are in need and trying to make sure that Donald Trump knows it wasn't just Democrats that got hurt in these floods. It was all of us, and really an opportunity for people to show that they understand that when they're elected, they represent every person in their district, not just those that voted for them. Jim, let's talk briefly, if you will, about this new opportunity for this very strange, very out of step U.S. Supreme Court to review its Obergefell decision, which made gay marriage legal and required states to acknowledge the same and to issue marriage certificates. This is pretty interesting. This case will be heard this fall. And it was brought by Kim Davis. If that name rings a bell, and I have to admit it wasn't the name of this lady, it was her photograph that rang my memory, that brought it up in my memory bank. Kim Davis was the former Kentucky county clerk who was actually jailed for 6 days back in 2015. So Obergefell was decided 10 years ago, and she was jailed when she refused to issue marriage licenses to a gay couple. And she was, that couple ultimately sued. They were awarded $100,000 in a jury verdict for emotional damages, plus about $250,000 in attorney's fees. She is appealing that ruling, and that is how this ended up in the U.S. Supreme Court. Jim, as our Supreme Court expert extraordinaire, as a former U.S. attorney, your reaction to this, when I read the Dobbs decision when it was leaked and then the final decision, the footprints and the fingerprints and all of it are all over that decision, that this court is open to potentially overruling Obergefell. This case is an interesting procedural posture. Kim Davis, this isn't a question, or it should not be a question of First Amendment or free religious expression, because she wasn't doing this as an individual. She was serving, to your initial point, Jim, in a governmental function. The law of the land was that she would issue those licenses. You don't get to decide that my individual religious preferences when you work in government will permit me to ignore what is the law. So it's a big deal. Again, she was held liable as a government, a state actor, and the First Amendment does not protect her actions or failure to act in this case. Your take on this filing from Ms. Davis?
I recall, again, 10 years ago when Justice Kennedy and the other members of the majority at the time issued this lofty decision, and you got it just right, Maggie, not surprisingly, when you described it as this affirmation of humanity, right? And this notion that everybody, it almost leaves the legal realm, right? And basically it's this notion that everybody has a right to marry, and they've got a privacy right, and it is this just absolutely transcendent language about who we are as Americans. Kim Davis, obviously not buying into any of that at the time. You recited her history, including her being found in contempt for failing to not only abide by the Obergefell decision, but not to issue the licenses that that decision contemplated. It is horrifying to, should be to every American, that somehow this is coming back again.
And here's what I find particularly offensive about this. I will grant, for argument's sake, that Kim Davis holds a good faith, religiously based belief that same-sex marriage is not appropriate under her faith teachings. Ms. Davis, that doesn't matter when you're executing government functions and when the law of the land at the time you were tasked with that government function is that those are valid marriages that people enjoy, that fundamental right. You don't get to say, well, I don't think so, which is why I find her request for the Supreme Court to hear this to be particularly offensive. It was because Obergefell had been decided and was the law of the land that Ms. Davis was held in contempt and then lost her case at trial and was granted, or the plaintiffs were granted, these significant some $350,000 in damages. In her request that the Supreme Court hear this case, again filed today, her attorney on her behalf says as one of the reasons for her appeal, why the verdict is wrong, why the damages award was wrong, is that the Obergefell v. Hodges decision by the Supreme Court finding gay marriage legal back in 2015 was, quote, egregiously wrong. The problem here, everyone, is even if the Supreme Court were to later overrule Obergefell, at the time she was required to act because she was a government actor, that was not the law. You don't get to say, well, whoopsies, let's go back in the Wayback Machine, in my time travel machine, and make the Supreme Court have a different decision, and that makes it okay that I refused to do my obligations as a government employee, as a state actor. Your thoughts on that, Jim? I was shocked.
Absolutely.
By that.
And as your point is so well taken, as a clerk, she has a ministerial duty. Let's use that word, right? And that means that you basically, when someone comes in, you almost put the stamp on it, right? You don't have any discretion. That's what the law is. You are obliged to do that by virtue of the fact that the population has put you in that spot. That's the reason why your failure to do that resulted in contempt. That's where you got to. This should not be the mechanism. If there is any, shouldn't happen. This
there,
is not
there
the
is
procedure,
no mechanism.
Right?
This is, you know, it's like getting, it's not even getting a driver's license. It's, you pay your money for the marriage certificate.
That's
the person
it.
Gives you the marriage right. certificate. She doesn't have some independent judgment that she gets to exercise. This is an abomination legally. I would argue it's also an abomination morally. When we come back with Jim Santel and each and every one of you, we're going to discuss the implications of nationalizing the D.C. police and how Pete Hegseth thinks none of it's really his problem anyways. Stay tuned. You're listening to the Civic Media Radio Network.
You're listening to Civic Media. Stay up to date on the latest news and information for your local community and Wisconsin by signing up for our free email newsletter. Visit civicmedia.us/email to get started.
I wish it was one love. It's not one love for Kim Davis, and it's not one love for a whole lot of folks on the far, far right. Welcome back, everybody. Welcome if you're just joining us. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. That's in reference to an appeal filed today by Kim Davis. She is the former Rowan County clerk. She was the clerk in 2015. She was the clerk after the Supreme Court made gay marriage legal back in 2015, except Kim decided, meh. Not if you're asking me to issue your marriage certificate. I'll just overrule the Supreme Court, Kim thought. Anyways, we started there today because it is some breaking news. We've got some more breaking news made by my colleague in broadcasting, Todd Alba. He's got the fine program before mine. Today, he was interviewing State Senator Kel DeRoys, who it appears is running for governor. Let's take a listen to that exchange.
It is 1 year. until the gubernatorial primaries in Wisconsin on August 12, 2026. Senator Keldor Royce, you've been mentioned. Any announcement? Do you have plans to run for the governor of the state of Wisconsin?
I am pretty likely to run for governor in 2026.
I think you made a little bit of news here.
I can't make an announcement this very second, but when I think about the opportunities that we have in our state and the need for a really strong leader with a lot of experience getting things done in a politically purple state, I feel really excited about my chances and about what we could do together in this state.
There you have it. It seems all but certain that State Senator Keldor Royce out of Madison area will be running for governor, entering that race in an already crowded Democratic primary field, including County Executive David Crowley, as well as Lieutenant Governor Sarah Rodriguez. Other folks are holding their breath to hear from former Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes, as well as City of Milwaukee Mayor Cavalier Johnson. Watch this space. More to come, and you can always catch that breaking news and those great interviews on the Civic Media Radio Network. Kudos to my colleague Todd for making some news this afternoon. I love it. We also have Kurt from Madison on the line right now. Kurt, say hello to Jim Santel. What you got for us?
Hey, Kurt, how are you?
Howdy ho, Jim. May I comment on this woman?
Yes.
Clerk's office.
Ms. Davis. Let's call her Ms. Davis. Yes. Yeah.
Ms. Davis. Yeah. You know, I'm soon to be 65, and the Republicans have been massaging and blurring the lines between separation and church and state. They have created this image in the heads of individuals like this that they can utilize their religious beliefs or their personal beliefs to overturn law, to not follow law. And now the way I see it at this point in time in my life is by far the worst I've ever seen. But this has started a long, long time ago when I was old enough to start remembering the debates between religion's involvement in political activities. My blood pressure must be easily over 200 on this. Because this, Jim, in the eyes of the law, even the Supreme Court, this should be a no-brainer slam dunk. We're not going to, it's done. We're not going to hear it. Been there, done that.
Hear, hear, Kurt. Absolutely. And let us hope that maybe there are not four people on the Supreme Court who say, yes, I'm going to grant this thing. I'm going to take this up. Maybe some sense will preside among them, and they will deny this application, which is what they should do. This should go back to the dustbin that it is coming from, not only for the reasons that Maggie and I talked about procedurally. It is odd. It is not properly there. But this is again, a movement toward an America that we have. We visited this already. This is privacy rights, right, Kurt? That's what you're talking about. And when you begin to reopen this door and suggest once again that these things that are all about our private lives, our personal relationships, that those now should be overtaken, can't agree with you more, by this argument about religion. My religion tells me, and so for that reason, this can't happen in your life. We have discussed that, and we have talked about that. That was the resolution of Obergefell 10 years ago. It is a scary time that the Supreme Court at least is got it on its docket right now. We hope we're going to get a decision apparently on September 29th. Maggie, I'm seeing that they're going to do a decision conference to tell us whether or not they're actually going to take the case. But we also know just this past term, Kurt, they're going to make your blood even boil more. That Mahmoud versus Taylor case, that case coming out of Maryland involving LGBT storybooks. What does the Supreme Court says? If your religion tells you that these very benign storybooks are problematic, and I don't want my daughter, my son, listening to that. And that, by the way, is yes, indeed, it is same-sex marriage, it's transgender issues. Religion wins, and you can opt out. That's the Supreme Court we're seeing. And Kurt, you make reference to many other situations where likewise, this Supreme Court, you bring religion in and you win these days, which has not been the case historically going back decades.
So I want to thank so much, Kurt. We appreciate you folks. If you want to get in on this great discussion with Jim Santel, former U.S. attorney, host of Amicus, which you can find from 9 to 11 across the network on Saturdays. If you want to get in on this discussion, 855-752-4842. There is a big distinction to me to be, there's many distinctions here, but one of the I want to put a box around this particular case, okay, this appeal by Ms. Davis. And the reason is this. Forget what the underlying merits are. What that case represents is complete and utter lawlessness. And that, to me, is what is so pernicious and dangerous. If Ms. Davis is right, it means that any individual government actor at any time can rip away your right to do pretty much anything, your right to get a license to do business or whatever it may be, and just claim that the law protecting that right, they didn't agree with at the time. That's what she's asking the court to endorse. It is dangerous. We're going to continue our conversation about dangerousness on the other side with you, Jim, and me, Maggie Dawn, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Keep it locked. Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. You are listening to the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Remember, you've got so many ways to access Civic Media. You can, of course, download the app wherever you get your apps from. It is free. Share with one and all. You can also listen on your local Civic Media affiliate. I come to you from beautiful Waukesha, 540 AM, 101 FM, WAUK, as well as you can catch me and Jim and see the show behind the show by watching Civic Media's YouTube channel. Just search for Civic Media. You can also check out the video feed from our shows at Maggie Dawn Show on Instagram, X, and Facebook. A big hello to one of our listeners and viewers on Facebook, Rhonda. We see your comments. Thank you for listening. If you want to participate and get in on the action, the social media feeds are one way to do that. You can comment. We see them. Sometimes we discuss them. We also have the phone and chat lines open, 855-752-4842. I've got former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, Jim Santel, with me as a fine guest this first hour. We've got U.S. Congresswoman Gwen Moore coming up at 5 p.m., so don't go anywhere. That's going to be a fun conversation, as it always is. Jim, I wanted, there is a link between a couple of things in the news, and though they may seem disparate, they are indeed
related. It is all tied together, right, Maggie?
It's always of a whole.
The same themes, right?
And that is part of what's going on with the federalization of troops in Washington, D.C., and we're going to get into some of the detail of that, but the place I wanted to start in the second half of this hour was what I thought was just, I guess it's so Hegseth. Maybe we can turn Pete's last name into a verb. He was Hegsething on Fox News yesterday. Let's take a listen to it, and then we'll talk about it. Take a listen here.
And the National Guard going to be picking up these tents, so the homeless tents, some of them have been cleared out. Well, what about those?
We're working with the marshals at, alongside them, alongside Park Police, alongside everybody else. Wherever they need the National Guard to assist, we're happy to be there.
Do you know where
them.
The homeless people are going to go?
That's not really my lane. Yeah. Our job is to stand alongside law enforcement. We'll do that.
Okay. So what's important here, and again, that relates our conversation about this challenge filed today in the Supreme Court by Kim Davis to overturn the right to gay marriage. The common thread between what Pete Hegseth said yesterday on Fox News and that filing today is this. The Supreme Court earlier this year, this prior term, decided that jurisdictions, local jurisdictions, can make sleeping outside by unhoused people a crime. And here's the connection. Pete Hegseth doesn't care about folks that are unhoused, never has, never will. So of course he has no idea what's happening. Of course he has no idea where or how these people might be cared for so that they're not abused, so they don't end up in more dangerous circumstances. He's not concerned about affordable housing. The president isn't concerned about affordable housing or any of the things that could help these people that are in these circumstances. But here's the link. A human being needs to sleep. And a human being has an innate right to their own identity, to love whom they love. These are human traits and characteristics. But because you're unhoused, you lose that right. That right's not protected by the Supreme Court. Our federal government doesn't give a whit about it. Just like they don't seem to care about your right to love and marry whom you choose.
And Maggie, your listeners should read Sonia Sotomayor's dissent in that case coming out of Oregon with respect to the homeless ordinances and the enforcement authorities that they have given to make those kinds of activities and the encampments criminal in nature. Sonia Sotomayor says just that. They're all human beings. They need to sleep. They need to eat. They've got some basic rights, I would argue, as did she also, to health care, basic sustenance in life, and the Supreme Court is drop-kicking that. Pete Hegseth picks up, of course, on the majority opinion there and says, you figure it out somehow. You can criminalize that behavior. You can do what you want. It is passing not only the buck, but it's also consistent with what we were chatting about earlier. It's not what government should be doing. Whether you're the Secretary of Defense or the Labor Secretary, you've got a concern about the American population and the derivative things that come from what you do. They have implications across the board, not just because it's not just there at the Pentagon, but because it is America. And how dare you? How dare you, Mr. Secretary, say, not my issue. That's somebody else around the cabinet table. Probably nobody else around the cabinet table in this administration will take that on. No, you've got a responsibility as a leader of this government to be concerned about every single American.
And let's just, I mean, we can get into more of the discussion about the federalization and the problems and the fact that this is happening and going on in the shadow of the Newsom v. Trump bench trial of 3 days that's occurring in New York, in California, pardon me. It seems to me that an incredibly false choice is being presented all of the time by so many, sometimes far left progressives, but often or more often, I feel like folks on the right, that Kim Davis can't possibly freely exercise her religion while other people freely exercise theirs and enjoy their basic human dignity rights to love whom they want and marry whom they choose. Why can't we do both? Mm-hmm. I have worked in government before. I know that we have had challenges with folks that are unhoused in Milwaukee County. You talk to folks that live in Denver and San Francisco. These are real public policy challenges. But we can call it a public policy challenge. It's a human dignity challenge. And we should be able to have safe parks and neighborhoods and streets and also try to figure out how to help these folks that are in need and treat them with some basic human dignity. To me, the idea of criminalizing sleeping because you do not have a home is anathema to that. Where is the solution for these people? And Pete Hegseth saying, oh, not my lane. Maybe that's true, sir. But you just had an opportunity on national television to at least acknowledge the dignity of these people, these citizens, and you failed to do so. The inability to articulate that we can do things that are seemingly conflictual, we can do hard things at the same time, that we can grapple with these difficult problems, that we will not present voters and citizens and residents with false choices, that you can either be safe or have individual rights respected, is so depressing to me. It's so, come on, Pete, it might not be your lane, but at least express some care and concern about these people that you're rounding up and kicking out of what we might not call a home, but which they do.
And that approach, that is the bright line that we're seeing more and more, this is going back to Dobbs and abortion. When Sam Alito comes out and he says, you know what? We're not finessing Roe versus Wade. We're saying bright line, it's done. It's over. You never, ever had a privacy right. That incapacity to believe two non-conflicting things at the same time and to go about solving a problem out there that has two parallel and sometimes related avenues. That's the capacity. That's the problem that we're seeing right now, as you have just said. We see it in the Supreme Court with these bright lines and these very clear, clear statements that do not admit of the fact that life fundamentally, we live it in the gray areas, right? And that's a good thing, right?
Anybody that presents to you challenging issues of our time and says it's not a gray area is a liar. And I'm going to listen. I don't like it when the far left does that. You know, that says you either have to do this or you're a bad person, right? Like, the world is incredibly complicated. Why we can't engage and talk about those complications is astounding to me. And again, I'm going to say to progressives, we have to be able to admit of the reality of the challenges. So when you're talking about unhoused people, or you're talking even about Ms. Davis, there is a pathway through that acknowledges her dignity, but the dignity and respect owed same-sex couples that wish to get married. That has been the whole premise, again, from Dobbs all the way through the cake baker in Colorado. It's as if your religious right gets to infringe on the human dignity of others. I forgot the place in the Constitution that said that. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. Cam from Appleton, say hello to Jim. What you got for us?
Hey, Cam.
Hey, Jim. Hey, Maggie. I'm wondering if any of this stuff has to do with them trying to make more chaos in the news again, too, because you got two other major things happening that I don't think the media has been able to cover pretty easily because they're not getting told information right now. And that's one, they're moving people out of the quote unquote alligator Alcatraz right now and closing it down. And then two, the Ghislaine Maxwell is allegedly out and about roaming around right now because she's out on a work permit.
Yeah, that is a real thing. I've got some reporting that has not been widely picked up that we can talk about a bit. Trust me, Cam, I'm going to get there today. We're going to try to get there this afternoon. Want to get in the rest of the folks on the text and phone lines. Steve from Milwaukee says the cruelty of incompetence is on display in the federal government. Trump's ego is astounding and disgusting. People are preying upon poor folks and uneducated American citizens for votes. There are two slices of history trying to repeat themselves, 1938 Germany and 1789 France. I hear you, Steve. Joe from Madison, say hello to Jim. What do you got for us?
Hi, Joe.
Hey, guys. Well, Mr. Hegseth says that it's not his lane. The Secretary of Defense says it's not his lane what happens to the homeless. Let's just look at this stat. 7% of the American public is classified as veterans. 13% of the homeless adult population are veterans. Okay? So they're overrepresented because veterans have gone through hard times, and some of them end up in homelessness. Of the 51% of individual homeless veterans have disability, 50% have serious mental illness, and 70% have substance abuse problems. When he says it's not their lane, what? People serve in the military and then they're just forgotten? Come on, there's a problem. Vets are overrepresented in the homeless population because they've gone through hard times. For him to say so callously, especially Mr. Christian, I don't care, it doesn't matter to me what happens, you can bet among those people that are going to be moved out of those camps, there are veterans. Absolutely, you can bet that. So I think that's my two cents. Thank you, guys.
Thanks, Joe.
Thanks, Joe. It is truly astounding. When we come back, we are going to get into the fact that the Trump administration, orchestrated by Attorney General Pam Bondi and Deputy Attorney General Todd Blanche, have not only transferred Ghislaine Maxwell to a minimum security facility, she's apparently on work release. Certainly sounds like the cushy deal that Alex Acosta, Donald Trump's nominee in his first administration to become the Secretary of Labor, cut with Jeff Epstein way back in the day. What's going on here? We tell you the actual facts about what's happening with Jim and I, and we explain what it means for you next on The Maggie Dawn Show. Stay tuned.
You're listening to Civic Media. Find the latest news, information, and archives of all your favorite shows on the Civic Media website, civicmedia.us.
Welcome back, everybody. I'm Maggie Dawn. This is the Maggie Dawn Show here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Got my good friend and yours with me this afternoon, former U.S. Attorney for the Eastern District of Wisconsin, James Santel. You can find his fine work as a broadcaster on a little show he calls Amicus, a law review, and it is anything but little. You want to get schooled on the inner workings of the federal judiciary, the law writ large. Jim's your guy.
It's a little wonky. It's a little wonky, Maggie,
wonky.
But we like wonky, right, on Civic Media?
That's what makes it good. I want to talk a bit about what has been going on with Ghislaine Maxwell. I will get, before the end of the show, to a federal judge in the Southern District of New York absolutely ripping the Trump administration related to their second request to a federal court to release grand jury transcripts related to Ghislaine Maxwell's conviction for sex trafficking. But Senator Sheldon Whitehouse yesterday sent a letter to the Federal Bureau of Prisons, which is a subdepartment of the Department of Justice. I'd asked for a specific set of information because it appears that after Todd Blanche, you know, Donald Trump's personal criminal defense lawyer, went and talked with her, she's now getting all sorts of favorable treatment that violates or arguably or potentially violates longstanding Department of Justice and Bureau of Prisons policies. She was transferred specifically from a low security facility in Florida to a minimum security facility in Bryan, Texas. Now, again, her sentence is 20 years for trafficking and sexual exploitation of minors. Bureau of Prisons policy states that if the criminal convictions involve sex offenses, you have to, at minimum, be in a low-security facility. She is now at a lesser facility. Because the policy states those minimum-security facilities are, quote, not appropriate for placement at an institution that would permit inmate access to the community. You know, minors, like the ones that Ghislaine Maxwell sexually trafficked. That is incredible. There is usually a lengthy process for this sort of prisoner transfer. And Allison Gill in Substack, on her Substack, has revealed some additional information. This is details here, but I want to share them with her, with all of you. Ghislaine Maxwell's security point score, so like the Bureau of Prisons, you literally sort of rate the dangerousness of a person that's incarcerated in the federal prison system. And that level of dangerousness typically dictates the circumstances of an individual's confinement. Her security point total score is 27. That is considered the greatest, very dangerous. She also has a 7-point base score, which is the highest severity because of her sex offender status. That would necessitate a low security prison incarceration. It makes it not appropriate for minimum security. It is kind of bananas here. There is a public safety factor. It's a PSF factor and sex offender coding on her file with the Bureau of Prisons. All of this means she should not be released into the public. What stands out here is the custody level, quote, out. Okay, this is from her Bureau of Prisons electronic file. You can find this on Allison Gill's Substack. Her custody level, quote, out at this new minimum security facility allows her to leave the minimum security campus for work assignments. So Donald Trump has released into a Texas community a convicted sex trafficker of minors. That is according to screenshots of her custody file from the Bureau of Prisons. You can find that on Allison Gill's Substack. Jim, I find this truly shocking.
We run out of adjectives. Got it just right. You've got people inside the Bureau of Prisons. This is their job. This is the expertise that they bring to it. Every single federal prisoner gets rated in this system. It is policy. It is practice. It is there, however, for a reason. Safety and security of the community. There's also a deterrent aspect of this as well, right? You want to send the message that, hey, you do these kinds of things, you're not going to be permitted to walk around in the community. That's a part of this as well. And consistency is the word when it comes to the Bureau of Prisons. You want to make certain that people, whether they're in California or Florida, New York, are all being treated roughly the same, can't be perfect, and have the same security status, same security numbers for everybody's concern. And when this happens, basically you're sending the message that means nothing. And that again, the notion that this particular conduct, I'm going to use the V word, it is a violent offense. It is. It's power. It is sex wrapped in there, but mostly it is violence against young girls. This is somebody, again, based upon the expertise of years, cross administrations, Bureau of Prisons, putting together these numbers, this process, it keeps the system honest. And when a president reaches in or a deputy attorney general reaches in and says, in this case, we're going to give you a special consideration, not only is that not rule of law, it basically threatens the safety and security of the surrounding community. Depending upon what the president does down the road, clemency maybe in our future, maybe a pardon. Also a reflection of a lack of the rule of law, a lack of seriousness in this administration.
Setting aside the rule of law, this is disgusting. Any person of good faith listening right now, that someone who engaged in child sex trafficking to service billionaires would be gifted minimum security and potentially work release should offend all of us. It is not okay. To be clear, neither Ms. Gill nor I have any confirmation that Ms. Maxwell has actually been granted work release, but that's what her security code says she may be granted in the future. That's going to do it for Jim and I, but stay with me and Civic Media. We got Congresswoman Gwen Moore up next. Don't go anywhere.
Thanks, Maggie.
The national news cycle never stops, but it can be hard to find news about your local community. Civic Media is dedicated to providing quality local and state news coverage across Wisconsin. With the Civic Media app, you can get notifications about local stories that matter to you and your community. Find the free Civic Media app in your phone's app store and choose notifications from the menu to tell us what kind of news you want to hear about.